get this microphone working. Okay. Well, thank you for coming out. I am, again, pediatric cardiologist Steve Lorch. As I'm sure all of you guys have come up, have questions about the cardiac examination and the recommendations. And there goes the microphone. The recommendations that the governing bodies of the state of Texas or the UIL or whatever alphabetical organization you'd like to belong to have. So hopefully I'll be able to get rid of some of your misconceptions and help you to talk to the parents and the kids about what is going on, why they have to fill out this. Is it up to 6 pages now? Last time I think it was 4 pages, front, back, trifold, 6, 8, 10 page form and all these checkboxes. There we go. So the all-important, I have no financial interest to disclose. So at the end of this presentation, you should be able to consider changes in your practice, related to the use of the current guidelines from the American College of Cardiology, whom I listen to, ordering of or recommending of specific diagnostic tests, elimination of the outdated diagnostic testing methods, and prescription or recommendations for newer different therapies. Also, have some competence and being comfortable in counseling families and patients. So unfortunately, the most recent guidelines, as you see, are from 2007. These things take forever to get released, and they take forever for people to come back with. So the most current recommendations endorsed by the AAP and the ACC and the AHA are from March 27, 2007. They are supposedly working on more. Who knows when they'll come out? So that paper is called Recommendations and Considerations Related to Pre-Participation Screening for Cardiovascular Abnormalities in Competitive Athletes, the 2007 update. Well, why is this an issue? This is an issue because parents are freaked out by when you come out and you say, something's wrong with your heart, I think you should see the cardiologist. Bells, whistles, panic, red face, passing out, all that good stuff. Which, by the way, is a reason to see the cardiologist. So why is this as or more important than other concerns than parents and patients have? Because it's the heart, of course. The heart runs everything. No heart, nothing. That's just my bias. So in the last school year, so this is the 2015-2016 school year. Rod Williams, this guy made the front page of the newspaper everywhere. 5'11", 300-pound junior offensive lineman. Very nice guy, life of the party, great guy in the locker room. Collapsed to the ground while waiting for a second, third turn, to taking on a blocking dummy in the September 22nd, 2015 practice in Burke County, Georgia. First drill of the practice, 6 or 7 minutes in. School's athletic trainer, who Parker says monitors most of this team practices, administered CPR, which on a 300-pound lineman isn't the easiest thing to do. For 7 to 8 minutes while the paramedics arrived, took him to the nearby hospital where they stabilized him until he died on October 6th without regaining consciousness. Most likely, he had hypertensive heart disease led to pulmonary edema, causing his lungs to fail. Temperatures were in the mid to high 70s, which around here is what, December? He had passed the school sports physical. This is the part that scares all of us. Passed the school sports physical over and over and over as he was a junior in high school. And yet still had hypertension and died. As the coaches and the athletic people in Burke County said, we don't know if there's anything else we could have done with the information that we had. We tried to follow a protocol that keeps our kids protected as best as they can. It was a really, really unforeseen and unfortunate incident. Tony Graham, 6'4", over 300 pounds, freshman in high school. Right there should raise some questions. Wanted to skip his freshman team and tried to try out for his varsity team. 4 days before his 14th birthday, collapsed while partaking in, quote, light stretching exercises and a voluntary conditioning workout. As we all know, voluntary conditioning workouts, they're not really voluntary, but they are what they are. Inside an air-conditioned gymnasium. Team coach's trainer called 911. Paramedics arrived. They believed the defibrillator was used. Went to the local regional medical center where he died 2 hours later. On autopsy, he had evidence of pre-existing cardiac disease. of, which has not been reported, what further it was. We couldn't have been more proactive in terms of putting the kids in a safe situation. We were not in a position to mandate any kind of cardiac testing or things of that nature. Can never be proactive enough, but I feel all measurable precautions have been taken. There is now a database which is optional, which some people use, some people do not. National Center for Catastrophic Sports Injury Research is based out of UNC Chapel Hill. In 2015, there were 10 indirect fatalities, five of which were cardiac related. Two high school students, one college student, and two that were in youth football. A 15-year-old was jumping rope during conditioning in spring practice, collapsed, died of sudden cardiac arrest of unknown etiology. 13-year-old freshman was stretching prior to weight training, collapsed. Cause of death is pending but believed to be pre-existing heart disease. 16-year-old was at morning football practice, presumably it was not too hot, transported to the field house after having difficulty breathing, died at the hospital, cause of death due to heat stroke. Reports indicate the heat index was 109 at 11 a.m. That's a good Texas summer. Male 14-year-old sophomore offensive lineman collapsed during football practice, died to complications from heat stroke, body temperature was 105 upon death. Male 16-year-old junior offensive line, defensive lineman felt ill during strength and conditioning, EMS was called, nothing was found wrong. Fell ill again at home, but found to be extremely dehydrated, deteriorated, and died. He had complications of sickle cell trait. Male 17-year-old junior offensive lineman collapsed during practice, believed to have died from pulmonary embolism and hypertensive heart disease. 13-year-old eighth grader was running during gym class, not even football practice, just gym class. Collapsed, transported to the hospital, cause of death was hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Sandlot football, good old 10-year-olds, was participating in his first football practice, was running and he collapsed and died. Cause of death was an anomalous origin of the left coronary artery. 9-year-old collapsed during a break at practice. CPR immediately started, died shortly after. Cause of death was to congenital heart disease that was not picked up. The one college student that died in 2015 was a 25-year-old offensive lineman, collapsed during training after complaining of shortness of breath and chest pain. He complained of chest pains the previous day, but previous assessment did not find anything abnormal, so he was put back out on the football field. EMS arrived, CPR was started, died shortly thereafter due to cardiac arrest. Sudden cardiac death in persons less than 35 years of age is extremely rare. Apparently, I have to be facing this way. It's likely responsible for over 2,500 deaths per year in the United States only. Well, and the incidence ranges between 0.06 and 1.3 deaths per 100,000 person years. So not very frequent. Causes of sudden cardiac death in the age group that we see. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, long QT syndrome, Brugada syndrome, arrhythmogenic right ventricular dysplasia, Wolff-Parkinson-White. These are all the things that we pick up when we're getting EKGs on all of these, the mass EKG screenings that we do. This is what we're looking for. Most common cause of sudden cardiac death is hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which accounts for about 33% of the sudden death in cases. EKG is abnormal in greater than 90% of kids with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. The 2000 recommendations focus primarily on mass screenings of high school and college-age athletes of all races and genders. We can extrapolate the information in this document to younger athletes, but is not specifically designed for younger athletes. Now, as we all know, hardcore athletics in Texas starts at about age 4. So we screen them. So this document recommends 12 items to be screened for, which can trigger further evaluation. A positive in any one of these 12 may be judged sufficient to trigger referral for cardiovascular evaluation. Medical history, personal history of exertional chest pain or discomfort, unexplained syncope or near syncope, excessive exertional and unexplained dyspnea or fatigue associated with exercise, prior recognition of a heart murmur, elevated systemic blood pressures, family history of premature death before 50 years due to heart disease in one or more relatives, disability from heart disease in a close relative less than 50 years of age, specific knowledge of certain cardiac conditions in family members, including hypertrophic or dilated cardiomyopathy, long QT syndrome or other ion channelopathies, Marfan syndrome, or other clinically important arrhythmias. So when you get that EKG back and it says something funny up the top, when it does not say normal sinus rhythm, normal ECG, pretty much I'm going to get a look at it. On physical examination, heart murmur, femoral pulses, got to check them. We want to make sure that there's no aortic coarctation or narrowing anywhere in the aorta. Any physical stigmata of Marfan syndrome? Probably all of you have had some training in specifically looking at your basketball players. Hey, he's 7'2", he's a great center, but he just looks a little funny. Brachial artery blood pressure in a sitting position on both arms, please. Again, a positive in any one of these 12 items can be judged sufficient to trigger a cardiovascular referral. And why are we doing this? Virtually all lawsuits brought against physicians have been settled out of court prior to ruling, so the legal framework of physician liability has never been established. We don't know from a legal standpoint what the issues are. However, both the IOC and the ESC have recommended that all young competitive athletes, however you'd like to define that, should be screened with a comprehensive history, physical, and a screening 12-lead EKG. Now, I say this, both of these organizations are heavily based out of Europe. And Europeans have a much more robust medical system, also a much more robust screening system for their young athletes. But the percentage of young Europeans that play sports is much lower than it is here in the United States. Current customary practices here in the United States. In high school, there's no universally accepted or mandated standards for screening of high school athletes. It is district to district, city to city, county to county, state to state. Standards have been left to the individual schools, districts, or state boards. In college, most, if not all by now, colleges conduct pre-participation screens within their existing trainer and physician infrastructure. The NCAA mandates a pre-participation evaluation in all collegiate athletes in Division I, II, and III before their first practice or competition. The Olympics, the IOC is recommending pre-participation EKGs, and the USOC administers the pre-participation HMP following the ACC guidelines prior to Summer and Winter Olympic Games. If they find anything funny, then they get evaluated. Non-invasive testing is only if indicated. Why is this? Money. Costs. As of 2007, it's estimated the annual cost to establish and continue a screening program for just the high school athletes in the United States would be upwards of $2 billion per year. Obviously, this data is 9 years old. It'll be higher now. Cost of detecting each athlete with a suspected cardiac disease is upwards of $330,000. Cost for preventing each death is $3.4 million. You're going to have a hard time getting your school districts to foot that bill. This is taken directly from the recommendations. Quote, complete and targeted personal family history and physical examination, including brachial artery blood pressure measurement, is designed to identify or raise the suspicion of those cardiovascular diseases known to cause sudden cardiac death or disease progression in young athletes, represent the most practical screening strategy for implementation in large populations of young competitive sports participants in the United States. Evaluation should be performed by a qualified examiner and include the 12 key AHA recommended elements for personal family history and physical examination, as well as parental verification of the medical history for high school and middle school athletes. Obtaining echocardiograms and or ECGs as part of a pre-participation screening remains optional. Such an approach is an obtainable objective and should be mandatory for all competitive athletes before their initial engagement in organized sports. Comprehensive screening evaluations should be administered again after 2 years for high school athletes. Again, these are just the recommendations from the ACC. I know we don't do that here in Texas. Controversies. So in Italy, they implemented a mandatory pre-participation screening program, and the incidence of sudden cardiac death decreased from 3.6 per 100,000 person years to 0.4. 2% of athletes screened were disqualified for cause, and of those, almost 10% had some sort of cardiomyopathy, whether it be hypertrophic or dilated. However, in studies from Europe, as well as small studies from the United States, they've indicated that the incidence of abnormal ECGs run between 10 and 40%. This has led the U.S. as a whole to cite the financial burden as well as availability to medical resources as a primary driving cause for not implementing a universal ECG screening program. So, a recent study in 2011 presented a trial where 32,000 high school students in Chicago were screened, and they managed to get, by volume a discount, ECGs at approximately $10 per study. Using trained personnel, 2.5% of the ECGs were abnormal, requiring further evaluation, which included echoes. However, the reason not to go straight to echo is they take a lot longer to perform. They're a lot more expensive than $10, and they're hard to get in some places. I'm sure you guys have lots of questions. I have 30 more slides, but I wanted to stop now because, one, it's 2 o'clock, and two, I know all of you are going to have lots of questions. Yes. So that is one in the 2007 recommendations, the pre-participation recommendations from the ACC, but it's also that, how many pages is it now? 4, 6? The UIL, the medical history form. All of those 50 or 60 or 80 checkboxes, those cover, if they fill out that form, all of those 12 items are covered. Yeah. I like 12 leads. 15 if I can get them, sometimes 18. Right, so those apps will do great for monitoring rhythms. So if you're looking at a supraventricular tachycardia, if you're looking at an arrhythmogenic right ventricle, if you're looking at Wolff-Parkinson-White, if you're looking at something that would potentially cause problems from a rhythm standpoint, those apps are fine. Things like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy will not be picked up by those apps because there you're not looking at rhythm, you're looking at the morphology, the shape, and the size of the waveforms, which can only be determined from an actual 12 lead. Yes?
If y'all need him, he has agreed to. If you need him to come talk to any of your board members, administration, or any of that regarding ECG testing or any of those things, he said he will be more than happy to. So if you can contact me, I can get you in contact with him.